Good morning. Hi, my name is Debbie, and I'm a compulsive eater. And welcome. Glad you're all here. Let's start with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Well, I'm glad you're all here. So I'll share briefly about what it was like and share my story. And I was, and how feelings are part of my life. Like, they were a huge part of my life. And I really believe that I ate over my feelings a lot. Like, first was taught to stuff them. I was not able to feel them. I was told, here, eat something when I had a feeling. I was not. Also remember my mother telling me, don't feel that way. You know, there was not, you know, it wasn't allowed. It wasn't acceptable. And so I grew up in, well, I was born in New Jersey. And I always say that I was born in Neptune, so I was an alien. I always felt different. Always felt like I did not belong. I did not understand what these people were talking about a lot most of my life. I felt like I didn't fit. I felt like I was, you know, there was something seriously wrong with me. And I was told that, too. My mother would say, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, after so many times of hearing that, you kind of wonder what's wrong with you. And learning that there's nothing wrong with me, actually. It was, you know, I was raised in an insane environment. And these people, they said they, you know, cared and loved for me. But there wasn't really, didn't show it, didn't know how to show it. My father came from Germany. He was born in Germany during the war, and we were Jewish. And he has this horrific story about how he might have been left in the middle of the woods and, you know, doesn't know if his parents were his parents. And, you know, I'm sure growing up that way, you kind of learn how you can, and still to this day, I say, how are you feeling? And he says, with my fingers. You know, that's how he feels, with his fingers. And it's just ridiculous, you know, trying to grow up and you know, I had so much emotion. And at 13, I really thought that I should just kill myself because I just didn't know what to do with all of my emotion. I was 198 pounds at 13 years old, and it was miserable. I was miserable. I was suicidal at 13, and I didn't know that. I had no idea that I was spiritually sick, and I never equated my emotions with spiritual sickness. I just never understood that at all. I never, I thought there was something, I was crazy, I thought I was bipolar, I was on medication, you name it, I tried it, my feelings ran my life, you know. I was compulsive, I just didn't know. I didn't even know how to identify them. I didn't know what they were. I just, you know, that big, huge sign where it has all those little faces about how what all these emotions are? I thought, I only have two. One is fear, and the other is anger. And I didn't even know how fearful and angry I was either. And I've learned that the anger just covered up the hurt. You know, it was a lot of hurt and a lot of stuff that I never knew how to deal with. And I've learned that that they won't kill me. I thought they would. I'm here to tell you that they will. I will. You cannot die over your emotions. And the more I tried to avoid them, the worse they got. You know, the more they built up, and the more I had to eat over them. I didn't have a choice. I really had to eat over my emotions, and not even being able to identify them. And my first instinct is, Just ignore it, you know. Just ignore it. Don't feel it. It'll go away, you know. And I really believe that I was taught that. It wasn't something that was spoken, but it was over a period of time that just these people that raised me didn't know how to feel their feelings, so why would they be able to teach me how to feel my feelings? And like a normal human person, we all have feelings, you know, but I think I should be perfect and not have them, and that is it's not any kind of way to live, because I can't live that way. I can't live that way without eating and trying to just be numb and not feel. I've learned some definitions, and I really like these definitions because they kind of explain some of the physical sensations that we have that go along with them. Because I always thought, you know, I didn't know my emotions manifested physically as well. You know, like I can feel my shoulders when I'm tense. I can feel, you know, things that go on. Like some of the stuff that I've learned is a lot of grief and a lot of loss and a lot of just underlying stuff that I have to dig at, that I have to get, and I have to be willing to look at it. And when I'm willing to look at it that and accept it and get to the other side, that's when I really don't ever have to eat again. And that's a miracle, because all of this stuff that was underneath is what I ate over in the first place. But besides being the fact that I am a compulsive eater and I was born that way, and that, you know, I have a disease, but this stuff helped me be free of that need and that compulsion of actually thinking that I really either have to die or I have to eat or hurt myself in some way. And so I've learned that, and I've put these emotions, like the feelings, on a strip, and we'll open it up for anybody who wants to share in a little bit. But I'll just read them. Loved is a sense of feeling valued, understood, heard, listened to, feeling safe with another, warmth in the heart, lightness of the body. Fear and anger. Fear is usually masked by anger. Fear is pounding heart, dilating pupils, increased breathing, tightening skin, extreme alertness, anger, tightening jaw, upwelling in the chest, gritting of the teeth, dilated pupils, angry thoughts. Shamed or ashamed is an intense feeling of being faulty, wrong, or inferior at the core of my being. A feeling of being ruptured, a burning feeling in the stomach, a sensation of body shrinking, spiraling inward in the stomach or chest or both. Restricted throat, difficulty in speaking, heaviness in the chest and difficulty breathing, feeling glared at by others. Guilt is a sense of unease or regret or wrongful or neglectful act against another, different from shame, because guilt is usually about something we have done rather than a statement of who we are. Amused, a light feeling of humor, good spirit, grins, smiles, God's medicine. Abandoned, a sense of loss, being left, pushed out, forgotten, minimized, betrayed, feeling vulnerable, feeling physically small, a dot, lost at sea. Embarrassed, an emotion arising from being exposed, caught in the act, confronted, ridiculed, feeling flushed, heat or redness in the face, shortened breath, involuntary stomach flutters. Betrayed, similar to abandonment, lied to, being deceived, and meaning feeling fooled, spiraling inward, weakness in the limbs, praying is difficult. Satisfied, a sense of feeling full inside, rested, not worried, trustful thoughts, being in the moment, not wandering, being in the body, centered to earth, grounded to earth. Hopeful, an expectation that things will work out, trusting oneself and others. Energy level rises, breathing is easier, hitting all green lights. Inspired, a sense of hope and wonderment of people, things, colors seem brighter, people seem to find their right size, more energy in the body, lightness of foot. Obstacles are secondary to solutions. Humiliated, a sense of having an inner self exposed, abused, or taken away by the acts of another or self, vacuumed out, void, soul theft. Loss or grief, a sense of that something has been taken, a longing for feeling given the answer to life, but unsure of the question, a schoolyard without children. Joy, a sense of integration of the coming out of the dark into light. Divided yourself, reunited, inner peace, recognizing the true self within, knowing you can trust yourself, seeing light in others, energy and warmth throughout the body. And I forgot to pass out my pictures. Here. And like I said, I was raised in well, I came out to Las Vegas when I was 8 years old, and my parents worked in casinos, and they were not available usually at night. They would work at night, and I remember feeling very alone. I definitely remember eating. I remember, you know, finding food to comfort that aloneness and just not, just being alone, like really alone. Like I felt like, I remember going to the kitchen to get food and taking my plate and sitting on the couch with it, and then taking my plate to the kitchen and intending to put my plate away and getting more food. I did that like 5 times. And I remember at 13, I thought that's not right. You shouldn't be doing that, because every time I went to the kitchen to put my plate away, I intended not to get food. I just intended to put my plate away, and I could not stop eating. And I did not have a solution at all at that time. And then I discovered drinking at 16, which was a godsend. I thought, what the hell have I been waiting? Like, how have I lasted this long without a drink? You know, seriously, I was a mess. and that, by the grace of God, has been landing me in Alcoholics Anonymous. But then I decided after high school I was going to get married. So that was going to fix it. And wound up, you know, having the house and the baby, and then doing speed because I couldn't control my eating, so that had to do it. And that landed me in Alcoholics Anonymous in 1996, and thank God, because I met people in AA that were weighing and measuring their food, and I thought they were insane. And little did I know, in 1998, I started See How, thank God. Because really, my food addiction, and, you know, I did AA for a long time, and I got involved in service, and I got a really strong foundation, but you can eat in AA. You can't drink and see how, you know? And I definitely went to, my home group had men and things that we don't eat, so that was why I went to AA. And when I really got involved in service with, and see how is when I really started getting better. And that has led me to so many other programs. And the funny thing is that I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. I mean, seriously, I thought I was kind of normal. You know? It's like learning how many things that are wrong with, not necessarily wrong with me, but things I need recovery for is quite eye-opening. But thank God there's recovery for all of it. You know, I have so many things that I qualify for. But when I started doing this work is when I started getting emotional sobriety. You know, that's led me to other things, and the clearing away of all of the emotions, because when I was concentrating on the emotions and beating myself and all the stuff that goes on in my head, blah, 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 you know, then I was able to see what else can be worked on, you know, and just getting my emotions right-sized was a miracle, because they were way too overwhelming. Ever since I was 13, they were just so overwhelming. They ruled me. I could not. And I didn't understand what to do with them. And now I have tools to identify them and write about it and learn really what's going on. Just asking the question, what is wrong, or what is going on? You know, how am I feeling? What do I need to do today at this moment? I don't feel the way I used to, because there was so much dammed up emotion that I ate over, that I did whatever I could to avoid it, that I had to feel like 30, 40 years of all that stuff, you know, and once I felt it and moved past it, now I get to feel what's absolutely going on today, which is appropriate. You know, I would like just all of a sudden react like crazy person and not know why. And I've heard that if I'm hysterical, it's historical. And I'd have to trace it back to where it came from and who this person reminds me of and what is really going on. Because it's usually never what is just on the surface if I'm really, really reacting to something. You know, it's usually old stuff. That person reminds me of my father or my mother or my brother. You know, my brother every day would tell me how stupid, fat, and ugly I was. You know, so when I hear, even this is an example of how I recognize, you know, people ask me a question. Okay, I get defensive when people ask me a question. I wonder why. So then I thought, well, I was asked questions because they already knew the answer. I was just being beaten with the question, you know, like, what'd you do that for? You know, it's like, that was the way, the tone that, and so when people ask me a question and don't, like, mean it that way, I take it that way still. So I get to learn, like, well, maybe he's just asking a question. You know, what a concept. But that's my stuff to work through, you know, and that's what I get to learn how to deal with me first so I can deal with everybody else. Because it's really what I'm bringing, you know, that makes it my reality and my perception of things. And I'm definitely learning how, like, to process things instead of just not. Because it's not easy to live with all that stuff. It's just too hard. Especially, you know, feeling so alone and wanting a connection to someone, that connection can't be possible if I'm not connected to myself, you know, and I'm still in the process of learning and doing that. And it's funny because I do try to avoid that, and that's what I want the most, you know, is a connection with other people, but I can't do it, and I can't be okay unless I'm okay first, you know. I can't have a connection with anyone else unless I'm taking care of myself first. And I was not taught to do that. I was taught that's selfish. You should not ever, you know, just take care of yourself. Who are you? Who do you think you are, is what I was told. And that's, I'm learning, is abusive, you know. I get to teach my kids how to process through their anger and to beat a pillow, or, you know, to talk about things, to write in their journal, to ask God to show me sometimes, you know, what I need to see. And how I can just how can I be of service today? You know, how can I do whatever His will is for me, and not to lose myself in the process? And I don't think God wants me to be miserable for the rest of my life. I don't. I think He wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. I think my higher power wants the best for me. I really do. And but I block that because I don't feel like I deserve it. Or there's other stuff in my life that I was told, you know, that you're not important, and that, you know, there were so many underlying messages that they were showing me how I wasn't worthy, or, you know, that I got that in my core, that I was not worth time and effort. I was not, you know, I didn't deserve to be happy, and that's not true. And these were people that's what they believe. So of course, you know, the influence of that is great, but today I get to learn how to counteract that. You know, it's taken me 45 years to undo what has been done in 18. You know, it's pretty amazing, but that was my basic foundation. And my mom was a compulsive eater, my dad was a gambler and a drug addict, and you know, and to this day when I tell my brother, you know, talk to my brother about my dad doing drugs, and he's like, no, don't say that, you know. It's like, really? Okay, I can't talk to my family of origin about what happened to me. I know what happened to me and my truth, and I have to stand in my truth, and knowing my truth helps me to be okay with me. You know, I don't need to, you know, convince him or tell him. I was smoking pot at 8 years old, you know. Normal kids don't do that, you know? And I wonder, you know, I look at my kids and think, that is just amazing. They're watching cartoons, you know, for God's sakes. And I was left alone a lot with babysitters who didn't care for us, you know, and that's something that I get to deal with. And I have to give myself credit for even actually being alive, you know? Some kids don't make it after having that experience. And the fact that I found recovery has been definitely a godsend. It's my life. It really is. It's I live breathe, and that's all I do is recovery, because really that's all I have. I can't do anything else. I don't want to do anything else. I want to recover. And I told a friend of mine that I found another program, and she's like, aren't you tired of doing all these programs? I'm like, you know what? If there's recovery from this stuff, why wouldn't I want to be better? You know, I'm grateful that I have recovery, and that there is recovery from it, you know, and that I don't have to die from this disease. You know, I have stuff to work on. I have, you know, my life is definitely not what I want it to be, but I am abstinent, and that's a miracle, really. Just this past year, my mom passed away in February, and I felt clean. Like, I knew that I had made up for all of whatever I did to her, you know, when I was out there and crazy, and she, to the day she died, you know, she was in the hospital, and I had stayed home with my kids for 7 years, and she was telling the nurse how wonderful my children were, and the nurse said, oh, I wonder how that is. And she said, their father. I was like, God love you. You know, she's not capable. She's a very sick woman. And she came from sick people. And, you know, and I just got to, you know, kiss her on the forehead, love her anyway. And that's a miracle. Because seriously, I thought about choking her out. But the thought crossed my mind afterward. But, you know, thank God for other programs and my recovery. You know, my side of the street was clean, and that's all I could do. And knowing today, knowing that that's who and what she was, that I didn't have to take on that stuff, that wasn't mine. That wasn't mine. That was hers, and that's how she felt about herself. She did not like herself, and I don't have to be that way anymore. You know, I don't have to be like her. I can encourage my children. I can tell them how wonderful they are. I can love them the best way I can love them, you know, and it had to start with me. I had to love myself first before I could love my kids, before I could love anyone else. And it's all been an inside job, you know, and that I pray every day to walk this path and to be the best person I can be. And I definitely have stuff. But when she passed in February, I thought, you know, when I first started to see how, I thought, you definitely have to eat over that. You know, somebody dies. That's just tragic. It's terrible. I didn't have to eat over that. Then my husband went to jail. And this was all in the same year, and I didn't have to eat over that. And then I'm in the process of getting a divorce, and I don't have to eat over that. And that is a direct result of doing this work. I know that if I did not do this work, I would have been eating by now. I mean, I ate over, you know, breaking a nail. There was nothing, there was really, you know, you don't stay abstinent. That's just not possible, you know. And my true nature is to eat, you know. So I have to learn how to live and not eat. And the reason that I know today that I've been able to get through this all is because I do this work, and it's saved my life. Because I know if I were to be eating today, I would be dead. I would have mustered up the courage to kill myself, because the last time I came in, I wanted to die. And I didn't care anymore. And it was so overwhelming, and it was so sad. And that's what happens when I eat. I get suicidal. That first bite will take me out. And it's deadly for me, because I know that I can't live in the disease. And whenever the disease shows up in my life, I have to be willing to root it out. Right now I'm working on some extra stuff, and it's really been a little, I don't know why it's so hard, but it just seems really hard. Like, every addiction has been hard. It just seems like really hard. I think that's the disease too. It just tells me how hard it is, and why bother, and it's too hard, just give up. And I just have to keep moving forward and keep taking directions and keep praying for willingness. And, you know, every time I act out, I just have to keep reminding myself that I'm here, and that I'm trying to do the deal, and that I'm getting better every day, and I'm way better than I used to be, and that's a miracle. And I really don't know what else to say. It's like, what time are we done? Quarter of. What time did she say? Huh? An hour? Are you kidding?
Let's meet the things and have a discussion.
Yes. I will open it up. I'll pass these out. These are some of the emotions. And if you want to share on them, come up and sign the paper.
Sign what paper?
There's a paper here. Just sign your name to release, yeah, for the tape, if you want to share. Does anybody want to share?
So can I face the other direction?
You can do whatever you want.
I'm sorry, too, though, Kathy. It's fine. Alisa, recovering compulsive overeater.
Hi, Alisa.
So mine is hopeful, an expectation that things will work out, trusting oneself and others, energy level rises, breathing is easier, hitting all green lights. I'm very hopeful. I think a lot of people in the room might be feeling a little bit as well because we're here. I heard someone that came in from Australia. Really? Are you in the room? She flew in from Australia to be at a convention. Could have been at the beach, you know. I live local, and I chose to stay overnight at the hotel with my roomies and friends. I live probably, 30 minutes from here in Cerritos, California. And again, didn't choose to go home each night. I wanted to be at the hotel because there's that whole bonding issue with my roommates and with friends that I've met already since I started at registration yesterday. I'm also hopeful because I've had lots of slips. So I'm not saying chronic slipper, but I'm definitely a slipper. And I did one where it was such a great one. I managed to stay away from porn for 10 years. And then I got a phone call because I'm an A for Alisa. I'm at the top of the list. So 10 years after, and I collect things too, someone had called me as an outreach call. I don't know who it is. I would certainly thank them. I said, oh, program. So I went back, and I'm in my back after 10 years, you know, so it's been about 8. So I'm always hopeful, and when I slip, and I do, I just jump back right away. That's one of the things I do. Right away, I get back in, and I'm still attending meetings. I'm still with a sponsor. I'm still with sponsees. And the last thing to tell you is I'm really fortunate because Ray Z is part of our area in the Whittier. And so I don't know, one night they just, do you need, she asked me for a ride home. That became a regular Thursday thing now. So, and it's nice. I get Thursdays to take Ray up and back to our meeting. But as you can all imagine, I get this usually private time with the co-sponsor of the whole group. And we also share some other commonalities besides being exactly the same height, same religion, belonged to O.A. Howard originally. I knew her in Downey, and she actually knew my parents. May they rest in peace. She actually knew my family. So it's kind of cool. We had this little special bond. And so I'm very fortunate, and I'm very hopeful. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm David. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, David.
Just a housekeeping item. In case it's not clear what the purpose of this is, you're giving your release to be on the recording on the website, and so you need to have your full name, not just initial. So, having said that, just do be sure to make sure you're signed on that form if you come up to the mic and say so.
Thank you
so much. It's through thinking about my feelings and my relation to food and my feelings that I was able to really embrace the concept of being a grateful compulsive eater, because I am a grateful compulsive eater because my feelings would have killed me otherwise, or at least so I thought, and I might have chosen, as was mentioned, to have a permanent solution to a temporary problem. So I'm very grateful that food was able to soothe me for a while. And I came to you all when it stopped working, really. And I was eating over feelings that were 2 years old. The people who were causing me to still eat had left, and I was still angry and afraid and resentful at them, and they weren't there anymore. And I had a moment where it's like, oh my God, my hand is shoving food into my mouth and I can't stop, and it's because of someone who isn't here anymore. I'm crazy. So I'm very grateful that I found a solution. About feelings, one of the things that clarity has given me is the realization that I almost never feel an unadulterated feeling. It's almost never just one thing. And that used to be so challenging. But that's life. And I get to experience, you know, the fine things. My mother, too, passed away last year, just about at this time. And I remember feeling sad and relieved. She had Alzheimer's, 5 years struggle, finally gone. And then guilty over feeling relief. And I was grateful because I was in the midst of conference and convention last year that I could see all of that and be okay. Okay, I feel guilty for feeling relief. And that's nothing to eat over, and that's fine. And it went away. So I pulled joy, which is a sense of integration of the survival traits, common behaviors. And I really feel integrated, which, good heavens, integration wasn't something I was looking for. But it found me, and I'm very grateful for it. Thanks.
Thanks.
Debbie, thank you so much for opening up. I mean, one of the hardest things for us is to even know that we have feelings, let alone share them with a group. So thanks for giving us the opportunity to share ours. And coincidence, I have joy also as my word. And the big deal is that my joy is no longer pretend. Before, I always had the idea that I was supposed to have joy. I could fake it really well. I always had a smile on my face, so people took it as joy. But deep down inside, it just was darkness. And so joy, coming out of the dark night of the soul with sureness of foot. And that's what this program has given to me. It's the literature that has so much wisdom into it. It's my sureness of foot. I was the princess in the pea. I, you know, had all these mattresses stacked up, and that pea was still getting to me. And I always thought it was, someone else's problem, that I was just being mistreated. I didn't realize that I just didn't understand what the real world was, that this is how everyone was basically treated. Yes, I had some different treatment than someone else, but, you know, I wasn't so out there. I wasn't, you know, this self-pity little girl or whatever. I just had reality in life to learn to deal with, and that's what the literature says. It says that we need a spiritual fix. I have a spiritual program. It led to sanity in food, first off, because of the food plan and doing the first 30 days and keeping abstinence. I've been abstinent since October 18th of 2006 when I came into the program. And that is not anything that ever came of me. I mean, I couldn't have done 2 days. I couldn't do 2 hours. I woke up every morning sick, and the first thing on my mind was what my diet was going to be that day. And, you know, in 10 minutes, that diet was probably down the drain, and 10 others had gone through my brain of, well, how am I going to fix this now? I don't do that anymore. I wake up now, I have my food plan, I have my sanity, and then I can go out and see this world and see you all and live. And that's the challenge, is every day there's something new to learn. I have things to learn today, and I get to share it with you all. So thank you.
Hi. My name is Mary Pat. I am a compulsive eater, food addict.
Hi, Mary Pat.
Thanks so much, Debbie. You really told my story. And, you know, we have the same family, the same brother. You know, it's really pretty amazing where we come from. And, you know, working in recovery for 27 years, starting in another program, I really, you know, have this past that really kept me down for a long time. And I learned in recovery that if I kept my past in my present, that I didn't have a present. And so I've tried to put that past behind me and thought I'd done a really good job doing that. However, I've recently been reminded that anger is a real feeling. And I have never expressed anger. I've never acknowledged anger. And I can remember being asked by a therapist way many years ago about my anger, you know, and my denial of my anger. And it's like, why can't you feel anger? And, you know, what came to me was my dad was a rageaholic. And my fear of expressing anger was that I would become my dad, that I would become a rager. And I acknowledge that, you know, and that's been a really long time ago. And I still have not expressed my anger. And it's causing issues in my life a lot. And and I know that I have trouble identifying not only anger but other feelings, and that's why I chose to come to this workshop. And I'm really glad that you were the leader. I didn't know that. But and the word that I got was amused. A light feeling of humor and good spirit, grins and smiles, God's medicine. And, I mean, I don't have a hard time feeling amused or even identifying amused or any of the light feelings. I can get there real quick. But the fear, the anger, all the negative feelings, you know, I just have learned to shut that down. And that was what I was taught, you know. And, you know, God forbid I express a real feeling when I was growing up. And, you know, I left home when I was 18. I got married on my 18th birthday. And also another similarity we have is coming to see how in 1998. And that might have been the year I met you. And I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Pat. There was an example recently of a cute thing, the story that my kids were, they were at football practice, and one of my sons started to cry, and the coach told him, "You can cry, but you can't quit." So I thought, that would have been nice for someone to hear that when I was a kid. You can cry. You're allowed to cry. Just keep going.
Good morning.
Morning.
Let's see. Oh, yeah. Good morning. Grateful compulsive eater. And just when you just said that, I was like, this is where I'm supposed to be. I've been looking for, Nate. Just what you just said there, that just resonated with me because I grew up in a family. I'm Nigerian, first generation American. And growing up, my mom always said, you cry too much. Oh, you're always crying. Stop crying. I mean, they're like, geez, I always said, America, no matter how you feel about it, is such a, you just don't deal with a lot of stuff that people deal with overseas. Like, they've been through an actual war, going under the bunks, just dealing with, you know, a lot of tragedy. So things that would hurt my feelings, she's just like, girl, that's not a big deal. And so I grew up always feeling like I cried too much. And so finally we went through a family tragedy when I was like 18. I lost my sister, and it was like one of those situations on the news. Everybody, you know, I was very abandoned, all these things. And I cried for a little while, and then I had to stop crying because it was like, my mom just put me in college. Girl, go to college. You got to keep moving, which I think is a, you know, they're resilient people. However, never deal with the inside. People don't talk. And I've been looking forward to coming because I didn't even realize how much I was burying my feelings, like, with food. Like, see, that's what, for me to admit that I was powerless over food, I was like, wait, okay, you don't get 3+ for years because you're a healthy eater. Like, let's think about this. You know, I was really like, let's think about this. And that's what I was doing. And it's like the first little, I ended up reading all of the little tabs, but the first one I pulled out was fear and anger. And during my inventory process, I realized how angry I was at so many people for so many things 16 years ago that I didn't even realize because I was so much in the food and numbing myself and just lying to everybody that I'm okay, I'm fine, I'm accomplishing all these things, so obviously I'm fine, you know? But I wasn't fine, you know? And food kept me company and was just like my safe being. And now I cry all the time. Like, I'm like tearing up. As soon as I was talking, I was just tearing up. And it's like, you know, when I talk to my family now and I'm tearing up, because they, what I realize is that they can't deal with that. Like, it hurts them so much that they can't deal with it. And they're allowed to have their experience too. But, you know, I was like, look, if I don't cry, I'm going to eat. And y'all want me to be healthier, so, like, you either going to have to listen to some crying. And I said, and I'll cry and it'll pass. Because I used to tell one of my sorority sisters, I think that if I start crying, I'll never stop. So that's why I was scared to cry for years. And now when I say I've cried more, like, I think I'm on, like, 70, day 78, 79. I have to double check. And thank you. And I've cried more in the past 78 days than I probably have in the past 16 years, honestly. And it's like, it's okay. And so that's why I'm here this weekend. Because even, you know, I still in my head, because again, it's only 78 days. I'm like, wow, last night I was like, I'm at a Compulsive Eaters Anonymous convention on a Friday night. Okay. And I'm having a good time. But I'm here, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow. So in my mind, I'm still kind of like, I'm a compulsive eater, but I'm not a compulsive eater. But I want to be here. But, you know, it's still that I just know I'm in the right place. And I'm just going to keep coming back because, you know, obviously there's some issues there that are finally bubbling up because I'm out of the food. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Miriam, a compulsive eater.
Hi, Miriam.
From Utah. My word is loved. And I've heard in metaphysical language that there's two sides of the coin or two ends of the spectrum. There's either fear or love. Everything boils down into either fear or love. And I grew up in a big, huge family of 17 kids, one mom, one dad, born one at a time, in shacks with outhouses, taking baths in the lake, and trying to find something to wear in a barrel that somebody gave us. And so I grew up kind of more like people's great grandparents did, and it was different. And of course, I didn't feel like I belonged. I just didn't even know if I was a real person, but I knew I was a part of a family. But one of our family activities was sitting around and talking about how stupid other people were. Here we are, poverty, idiots living in shacks, and we have the audacity to point out how much better we are than everyone. And it was our parents' teaching, and we would come home from activities and just do stand-up comedy and telling about everybody else and how stupid they were and what they did, and our parents would just laugh, and so it's a bad habit. And so when I look at people, sometimes I just automatically go to, what could be wrong with them, so that I won't have to look at myself, of course. And so I will feel like, well, at least I'm not that bad, or at least I don't do that. And I learned one time, if I would look at another person and see them as a little 3-year-old, because I love preschool age, they're so cute, and they can talk, and they're so innocent, and they're loving, and they can learn and they're grateful. And anyway, if I can look at somebody and imagine what would they look like if they're three, that started me on the road to loving other people and helped me overcome the barrier of judgment. And of course, I was only judging myself. And I learned that if I thought, look at that, the lady's shoes, those are so stupid. And like, okay, what about me? Okay, oh, I know. It's because I never really got to have shoes much growing up. And I had to fight for something to wear and shoes. And like, that's why I'm pointing out in my brain that lady's shoes of course, somebody else might weigh different. Like, oh, I've just struggled so much with all those years of food addiction and being fat, and it's about me. Or did you ever see such a stupid hairdo? Oh, it's because I just never got to wash my hair very good until I'd go to gym class, or I was worrying. It always comes back to myself. Anyway. I just know that how much happier I am in life getting to feel God's love, feel higher power's love by connecting and feeling love for other people. So thanks, I'll pass.
I'm Johnny. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Johnny.
Thank you for your share. I grew up also in a family where you were not allowed to express your feelings. Forget having a different feeling. You would never voice it. So, yes. So I learned to stuff my feelings, and I stuff my feelings with food. And in my family, food is love. Food is still love. In my family, that's how we express, or I used to express love that way. But thank God, in program, I've learned how to truly express love in other ways. And my word was loved, and I underlined feeling valued, understood, heard, listened to, feeling safe. And what came to my mind when I read my word was my experience in See How. It was with my group in Dallas that I learned to love myself because they loved me. And when I walked into that room, I remember vividly walking into that room, and it was in 2005, and it was just complete acceptance. I was never in an environment at church, at home, at work, where people listened to what I said and didn't cut me off. If I told them that I was sick, then they would tell me about their cousin's friend who was sicker. Mm-hmm. And it never failed. I mean, they would never truly, truly listen to me. But in those rooms, I'm listened to, I'm heard, I'm not judged, and I'm living in the solution. And I'm thankful. I'm so thankful. And I'll pass with that. Thanks.
Thanks, Karen.
Sign the paper, but I will. My back was hurting, so I wasn't going to share, but it's feeling a little better. And the question I pulled was loss or grief. And I don't cry when people pass on. You know, when my parents died, I didn't cry. When my grandparents died, I didn't cry. The only time I really cried was when I had an uncle who wasn't really blood related, and he was like a pseudo father who would do things for us, you know. He felt sorry for us, you know, because there were five of us, and my father was a working alcoholic, you know, who the minute he was off work just drank. And my mother was a rager, and 450 pounds of rage, you know. So she did the best she could with whatever she got for us. And to me, it was like a relief when she died, because she suffered, you know, with her weight, her, you know, she had cancer, and my dad, well, there was no feeling there for him, you know. And recently, I had a food sponsor, and she became my Al-Anon sponsor, but she passed away a few months ago, and I used to live with her, and I had to move out because she had no recovery in her life going on anymore. And I was checking on her because I hadn't, we were always calling each other, and I went and I found her, you know, passed away. And I had to call the police, you know, and they came out. And anyways, I did cry when, you know, I think it was a shock is what it was. And I did see a therapist, and I dealt with those issues, and she told me, you know, you did the best that you could. You tried to show her there was recovery. You were seeking recovery, and you were the light there, but she just did, you know, she turned away from it. But I did hold a memorial for her, you know, and one of my friends played a song, and I played a song on guitar, and, you know, it was nice because I pulled a lot of people from program just to come, even if they didn't know her. They knew about her from my sharing, and they were there for me, you know, and a few of my family came, and they didn't understand what was going on because I had nothing but abstinent food there. They couldn't understand why there was no, you know, junky food. And but, you know, I got the encouragement from my friends and program, and that's my family today. You know, I realized that, you know, I couldn't trust my family to open up and share. And the way they, a few years ago, I know that one of my sisters told me that the oldest one had said, "What is wrong with Anna? You know, she's not like us." Damn right I'm not. Anyways, I'm grateful for my recovery and to be here. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Beth, compulsive eater.
Hi, Beth.
I grew up in a family that you weren't allowed to show feelings. If I would cry or I would express any kind of emotion, my mother would say, "You know, I think you need to go to Danville." Now, all of you know, probably, a mental institution. Well, that was ours, Danville. So that was a word I grew up with most of my life. And so, consequently, I couldn't understand other people that had other feelings. And I'm just now learning what feelings are. Oh, this is, and this one I have... I drew amused, a light feeling of humor or good spirit, grins and smiles, God's medicine. Well, man, that was me. Even in my high school yearbook, they're saying, always smiling, always smiling. I didn't know how to do anything else. So I'm a work in progress. I cry at the drop of a hat. I don't like it because it embarrasses me. My mother says that's a terrible thing to do. But when she told me, she said, "I never cried at my mother's funeral because I knew I did her right. I knew I listened to her all the time," and I'm sure that's the same message that she got. Don't cry. Don't show your emotion, because that shows weakness. And so I'm thankful that I got smiling, because I don't always feel like smiling, but I do anyway. This program is teaching me how to feel, and it's God's blessing. It's like being on the last house on the block. This is where it stops. And I'm so grateful to all of you, because I'm learning how to feel. Thank you.
I'm Dave, compulsive eater.
Hi, Dave.
Debbie, thanks thanks for your wisdom, for sharing about, well, something I picked up in here was to ask myself questions and ask questions of the environment. What am I feeling? What am I thinking? But what I'm reacting to, I've got a job where I'm talking to people a lot, where I'm in meetings, and I get sharp with people and short with them, and I'm impatient, and I've got my schedule to run, and why are you bothering me? And on phone calls where I'm supposed to be building teamwork and making things happen. And it's I've used food for so many years to shelter myself away from disappointment. A lot of people in my family when I was younger were putting me down. I couldn't be good enough, and that sort of thing. And I developed a self-deprecating humor. I really don't need you to get me started to put myself down. I can do it all by myself. But I had family members who would put me down anyway. And I carried that into adulthood and would use food to just shelter and get away from that. And so I would be sharp. I've been short with people. And to slow myself down and ask, am I reacting to you or reacting to people in my past, reacting to something else, which you brought out today, means a lot for me. Program has helped me a lot in slowing myself down and realizing that everything has a beginning, middle, end. And it means I have to do less sometimes too. Love to eat and leave the dishes, put on clothes, leave a pile over there. You know, I'll get it Wednesday. And I'm learning that everything has a beginning, middle, end, that I can do less, just do that part of it and be done and keep my side of the street clean and keep my side of the house clean. And it's making a difference. I'm finding that with emotional clarity, the things that I ran from, I'm now, the challenges I'm not so much running toward, but I'm taking them as opposed to running away from them. And worse things are happening for us. and we're dealing with them and seeing them for what they are and finding answers as opposed to running and running and eating and eating. So I'm so grateful to God, so grateful for this program and what it means for me. I'm embracing reality, and I thank you for your support too, for doing this together with me. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Kat Kapulsa-Veter.
Hi, Kat.
I didn't sign yet, but I will. About feelings, what I thought was interesting, I was never told not to feel, not to cry, but it's just never discussed. And I think my mom did. She smoked, and she didn't know how to handle her feelings either, so I just never learned what to do with them. But what I did learn is that it's okay to cry. It's good to cry. After you cry, you feel there's this emotional, the anxiety that's kind of a release. It's a physical release of the emotions. But what I realized is I have to watch what words, what tapes are running in my mind. If I would let myself cry, but I have to stop telling myself negative things. You're this, you're that, you're ugly, you're boring. I have to just cry, let it out, but avoid those negative thoughts. And I think that the negative thoughts cause you to feel bad, and then when you're having an emotion and it hits you, also can feed those thoughts and make you start thinking those thoughts. So, you know, the thing that's good about program is, you know, it focuses on positive thinking and going to people and working those things out and focusing on positive thoughts. And, you know, don't deny what you're thinking, but if you share with them with somebody and listen to what they're saying. And if they're saying, no, that's not true, listen to them and choose to believe that you're not ugly, boring, and, you know, and you have to make that actual choice to believe that. So anyway, thank you.
Make sure you sign the paper before you share, please. Thank you.
My name's Mary, and I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Mary.
And this is a workshop I picked because of, guess why? And my heart is really racing. My heart is very racing, and those tears we all talk about. I don't even know. I have to ask God what I want to share. I was thinking what I wanted to share with you guys. I've been in recovery a long time, and it's taken me years and years. I do a lot of writing, a lot of 10 steps. I really believe uncover, discover, and discard. I haven't had a consistent abstinence. I have a tremendous amount of weight loss. But when things get tough, I would eat again. And each time I went out, God's grace for me is I've learned more about myself, about the healing process that we get to have in here. If we stay, you don't leave. That's the only thing I ever tell anyone. That's God's grace for me. I haven't left in 31 years. So that's obviously before house started. I came in very damaged. I came into recovery very, very damaged. And why a man's voice is so, when I was 16, my father almost killed me. And I came from a household, and all I had told my father was I hated him. Well, my kids all at one point told me they hated. And he was a security guard, and he took off a belt, and he came after me. And he had me trapped in the corner. And if my mother and brother hadn't been there, but I buried it very quick. And years later, I asked my mom, what did you do after they pulled him off me? And she said nothing. And that's the house I grew up in. Nothing was ever dealt with. It just was never said again. And when I said to mom, what did you do? And she went, nothing. And that's how I live my life in this house with these people. And so it's been a lifetime of getting past that. And I've had to do a lot of work with my husband. I married 47 years, and that's another one. And this is the last few years. And he would be, he's a very good man, but he can get very loud and abusive. And I didn't realize it was allowing. Our kids had called him on it. And I put my hand up one day, and I said, you can no longer talk to me that way. And the miracle was he's never done it again. So, you know, we seek out people the same level. But I want to share with you, this is cool. God's grace, I had three gods for years. I didn't even know it. I had food. I had trying to get a God. My mom was a runaway. My father was 20 years older. He was in the military. And he was a Roman Catholic. My mother was Jewish. I'm born in 1943. So they decided to take their first child and raise her in both religions. You have any idea what that must be like for a five-year-old? And unfortunately, I'm very smart. So I've never been able to make fun anything with religion. So I had all that stuff going. And it's taken me years to get to that. I love anything, and I can really identify with higher power. So that's the kind of stuff that I've had to uncover, discover, and look at over and over. Where I'm at today, I have the essence I've always wanted. I've seen it's done. I can't do it anymore, and I'm grateful. But there are things you have to do so you don't take that first bite. Well, God's grace is I've never left. That's amazing in 31 years, and I married 47. But a trust is an issue, and that's with the feelings. And I got joy. I want to talk about joy. I wake up with a quiet mind. I don't have any of that. And it starts, you know, an hour later. But it's quiet when I get up. That's amazing to me. I've never had a quiet mind. But the other thing about that, I'm not into I coulda, I woulda, I shoulda yesterday. And today's going to be the day. I'm going to get it. I'm going to get healed. It's gone. And that's God's grace. So here's I always overtalk. Here's the deal. We planted two tomato bushes. We're not gardeners. We've had this house outside our front door. And only if it's in line of vision do we remember to water these things. But I've had this incredible abundance of cherry tomatoes. And we come home for finding out he's cancer-free, and there's crows on our roof. The crows never been on our roof. We've been in this house so long. And my husband says, I think they're after the tomatoes. I think I go in the house. I pick them early in the morning because I love them when they're ripe. It's fun to be a gardener. I'm from New York, so I'm not a gardener. And within an hour, I'm going out there picking the tomatoes. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't even think about it. And I came in and I picked them and they weren't ripe. And this is God's grace because I do a lot of meditating. Oh my God, those tomatoes were never mine. And see, I have taken possession of people, places, and things to make me okay. I didn't know that those tomatoes, I know what I'm talking about. Those tomatoes never belonged to me. They were God's tomato. And if the plan was the crows get them, get out of the way. But I had to have for me that visual. And then about a few days later, I've always seen myself outside of the world, even though I try real hard to be part of. And I knew for the first time I was one of God's children. I had never had experience. And some of you know today's my 71st birthday. Don't leave here because this is the hope you have for yourself. That each of us has to have our own path. So don't leave.
Hi, I'm Q, grateful compulsive overeater.
Hi, Q.
And I first picked up Betrayed, and I didn't like that. So I went back and I dug through and I picked up Inspired, because that's me, you know. A sense of hope, wonderment of people and things. Colors seem brighter. Problems seem to find their right size. More energy in the body. Lightness of foot and obstacles are secondary to solutions. And that's me. I'm always taking the light side of things and not digging deep. And that's one of the reasons I came here, because I don't cry. I haven't cried for a long time. And I just don't know why. I've lost a son and a sister, and I cried a little bit, but not tons and tons and tons. And part of that is that I have faith, and I believe in God, and I believe in that as long as my family knows the Lord, that I'm going to see them again. And so I guess that's given me the courage and strength to not cry. But sometimes I was reading a book or watching a movie, and I started crying, and I said, leave me alone. I want to cry, because I know that that's a cleansing. It is a cleansing scene to us all. But and I was talking with somebody, my sponsor just said to me, she said, don't you do any, you know, serious writing? And I thought back to high school when we were given three sentences that we had to write on, and my teacher finally said to me, can't you write about anything serious? You know, I was always the lighthearted, happy-go-lucky person, and you could see that with me today. And I don't know. I just hope I can learn more and continue to learn more through this program about caring for me and realizing that I am important and I do have to take care of me. Thank you.
I'm Melissa, compulsive eater. I did sign my release. I like to be a good girl. Anyway, for feelings for me, I got embarrassment, an emotion arising from being exposed, caught in the act, confronted, ridiculed, feeling flushed, heat or redness in the face, shortened breath, involuntary stomach flutters. So usually I don't mind being embarrassed, but I think this is a different kind of embarrassed. I usually like to be silly and fun. But when I do have feelings, I just remember my ex saying, whatever she says, just divide by three, because I would exaggerate too much. So, because I felt like no one was listening to me, so I had to make it like way bigger and way more than it was. It was like 500 people were in front of me in the lunch line or something, or just since, and it was like five people, you know, so. Anyway, and today, being abstinent, I have a lot more feelings. I was very angry. There wasn't enough oatmeal this morning, and I almost lost it. I was angry at the person that had nothing to do with it, and then I was like, and then the milk was out, and I was just like. So anyway, and I remember growing up, my mother would, if I was ever angry, which was very rare, she said, people don't like angry people. And so I was never allowed to be angry. I just never did. I wanted people to like me. And I wanted to have fun and be friendly. And I just held those resentments in, or the anger in. And I had an experience this week of being embarrassed. And I had to kind of bite the bullet and make an amends and get through those feelings. But first I had to call my sponsor and cry. And I had to call another friend and cry. And crying's easy for me. Getting angry is not. Like, I always feel like people have a right to be angry with me. Like, I don't know. I'm like, well, maybe I did something. Or maybe, you know, I can't really call them out. It's just a little bit mean, but it's something I didn't like. But I didn't feel the courage to say, hey, that really hurt me. So those are some of the things I'm working on. It's just not avoiding. And then when other people are angry, it really scares me. And what happens when, like, my fiancé is angry with me, my immediate reaction is I'm packing my bags and leaving, but that is not a normal reaction. And I'm like, forget this. You know, he's on a fishing trip and I'm here at Sea Hound. I'm like, when he's gone, I'm packing up everything. No, instead of actually talking it out, hopefully he doesn't listen to us. He won't. So I was able to make the outreach. I was able to say, look, I was really angry that you were angry at me. And I was trying to keep it myself. I feel scared when you get angry. And he was able to hear that, and I feel like a child and not like your equal. And those were miracles for me. Before, I would just run away, silent treatment, not talk to him. And then it all worked out, and he apologized for that. I apologized for my part. And that's all working this program. And I realized after I was doing a lot of like those daily readers that what I heard was, it's okay to be angry. It's just how you react to it and how you present yourself afterwards. So I'm learning that all the feelings are okay. And it's just how we choose not to eat over them and choose to just do a different way. And this program's the only way that's helped me do that. And I don't think I would have if I wasn't abstinent, because I didn't really care. I was like, you could do whatever you wanted. I'm just going to eat. So that is just a blessing and a miracle. And I've stopped exaggerating most of the time. So anyway, thanks for letting me be here.
Hi, guys. I'm Beth, compulsive eater.
Hi, Beth.
I'm sorry I'm late, but I got lost on the 405. It's funny, I got betrayed, which is my number one scary thing I go to first, emotion. I'm always waiting to be betrayed. I know you're going to betray me, I'm just waiting. And I can be nice until you do, and then aha! So I've been with a man for about 11 years. Which is a miracle for me, because I've done nothing for 11 years of my whole life, except work, because that can't betray you. It's inanimate. And secretly, I've been in this program since 1996, but secretly I'm waiting for that other shoe to drop. I'm waiting. I know he's going to betray me, and it never happens. But I know it's going to. But when I have those feelings, I have this program. And I know what my head tells me. Most of it is untrue. And if he's going to betray me, I'll wait till that happens, and I don't have to anticipate it, and it may not happen. And I've been able to have a really healthy, loving relationship in spite of myself. And I just think that we are not our feelings. Thank God. Disappointment and betrayal. That's a place that I can live in if I let myself. Because that's how I grew up. And shame. That's a great one. But I really don't have a lot of that anymore. I still have a little bit of it. But I know that if I write, if I call, if I go to a lot of meetings, and ultimately if I give service, that I'm safe. That I am safe in this world. And if you do get betrayed, you don't die. You get betrayed. It's okay. Because it's not really a reflection of you, it's a reflection of who that person is. And if it is a reflection of you, then I can work on that, and I can help myself. So thank you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. I'm Gail, compulsive eater.
Hi, Gail.
Hi. I got humiliated. A sense of having the inner self exposed... I got humiliated. A sense of having the inner self exposed, abused, or taken away by the act of another, or self vacuumed out, void, soul theft. Well, when I was, that's how my life started. When I was 3 or 4 years old, I'm not quite sure, I think I was 3, was the first time that I was sexually molested by my grandfather. And I didn't know what was happening to me, and I was terrified. And I know a lot of people that eventually have eating disorders and compulsive eating are people that have had these experiences. And I guess it's a lot more common than I knew as I went on my journey through life learning. But the repercussions of that were I did feel like, you know, I was robbed of my childhood and probably part of my soul. And it was a terrifying, horrendous experience. And I tried as I got older to, as most young children who this happens to, you're afraid to say anything to anybody. And I was one of those kids because I was so terrified and I was so anxiety ridden and so full of fear. And I took those things with me on my journey through life, unfortunately. And also as I got older, then I started feeling the anger and the rage. And I didn't know what to do with those things. I finally went to therapy. And, you know, therapy is a good thing. And it helped a little bit. But several years after that, I went back to therapy. And the next therapist helped me a little bit more. And then several years after that, I went to another therapist. And that therapist really helped me a lot. And so I have always had problems coping with my fear, my anxiety, and my feelings. And when I compulsively started eating when I was a teenager, I was so out of control. I shot up to like 200 pounds in about a minute, it seemed like. It was just awful. Anyway, when I came to CEA Howe in 2006, my son had just gone to rehab for drinking and drugs, and he was 17 or 18, and my daughter was in a terrible relationship and smoking pot constantly. And my sister I have many sisters, but my sister that was a year younger than me got very sick with ovarian cancer, and I was taking care of her. And my dad was also not doing well, and he was deteriorating. So I had all these emotional storm hit me all at once. And I said to my therapist, I'm gaining all this weight, and I'm just eating my feelings, and I can't get it under control. And he sent me to OA. He said, just go in the computer and you'll find it. So I did that, and I thought I found OA, and then I went to the place where the meeting was, and they said, oh, they don't have OA here, but they have Compulsive Eaters Anonymous. And I went, thank God, that's what I am. That's what one I need. That's it. So I went to the meeting. I joined immediately, got a sponsor, and started working the steps. And I'm so glad that I just jumped right in because I was so miserable that I was willing to do anything after years of doing, you know, so much emotional stress and upset that I couldn't seem to get a handle on. Well, a whole new life opened up for me at that point because as I worked the steps and I went through my inventory and had to make lists of people and had to make amends and all these things, I was actually, oh, and my sponsor made me write my grandfather a letter because he's dead. He was dead by then. And all these things, they were just incredibly helpful. And I felt like I lost 50 pounds, but I felt like the unburdening of all the things that I'd been carrying with me on my journey through life that were hurting me, that I needed to let go of, I was finally able to do that. And it was the most amazing, happy, joyous experience. Fantastic. And, of course, I started leading meetings and sponsoring, and I was an intergroup rep, and I was just trying to be of service and do anything and everything. And that, too, became such a joy in my life, sponsoring other people and watching them change and grow and find happiness in this program. And I just have to say, the hope is amazing. I definitely have hope and joy, and instead of being depressed and anxious and full of fear, I know that I have tools now that I don't have to eat my feelings, and I don't have to make myself miserable and isolated and more anxious and afraid. Instead, I am out in the sunshine, living my life, appreciating every day with my wonderful family and my friends and my beautiful group at CEA Howe that we love so much and support each other so much. And I've just grown so much. I'm so, so grateful for this program. Full of gratitude. Thank you.
Thank you. Ready to wrap it up? All right. If you didn't sign the paper, please do so. If you shared on the microphone so we can get the recording on the website. And we'll close with the Serenity Prayer.
Thank you.